Ms. Wittern.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Nadine Wickern, Assistant Attorney General, on behalf of Defendants Appellants Seth Wessel and George Lay. Wessel and Lay are here today to ask this Court to grant them a new trial on the substantive due process claims that Earl Davis brought against them. Based on the fact that the jury was erroneously instructed on the standard of liability for the claim that he brought. Moreover, the district court abused its discretion by not giving the court order instruction, and these errors in the instructions caused them prejudice.
Did you ever propose a jury instruction that incorporated a recklessness requirement or any instruction based on the due process clause? The due process standard, I should say.
The instructions that were proposed by Wessel and Lay included the malicious and sadistic standard,
right.
Because that was the standard that was believed to govern such claims at the time. And while it's still not clear, because the Supreme Court and this Court has not articulated what standard would apply to these kinds of claims, after the trial, and in fact after the appeal was taken in this case, this Court issued the decision in Kingsley that indicated at least recklessness would be required in a jury instruction. And throughout the time that we were debating what the instructions should be, the defendants were always clear that some kind of mens rea was required in order to satisfy the standard of due process.
Well, the Kingsley case was not a person who was detained under this civil commitment type of program.
Correct. That was a pretrial detainee, and that's kind of part of...
On a criminal charge.
What's that?
On a criminal charge.
On a criminal charge. And that's part of the problem with these types of cases. The Supreme Court and this Court has not indicated how much protection and what standard would apply to those who are civilly detained under the Sexually Violent Persons Act.
But would you agree that civil detainees cannot be subjected to punishment, and therefore the Eighth Amendment, which allows punishment that is not cruel or unusual, wouldn't provide sufficient protection for that class of persons?
Under the Youngberg case and Bell, the court indicated that those who are civilly confined cannot be punished because the purpose of their detention is to detain them, not to punish. However, in this court's decision in Thielman, the court indicated that those who are held because of sexual dangerousness might have more of an incentive to escape, and they've been found to be dangerous to society. So unlike a civilly committed mental patient who does not have these sexual tendencies, I think that goes into
So what is it you want as a standard, say, subject? What precisely?
Well, I think, you know, we would initially ask for the malicious and sadistic standard, but at the very least a recklessness standard.
Meaning what?
What specific standard?
Yeah, what do you mean by recklessness?
Well, criminal recklessness, so that there's an intent to harm, knowing that this action would cause
that's
the risk
not
of harm.
Recklessness, intent to harm.
I'm sorry?
You don't need intent to harm.
Well,
you tell
intent
me
or disregard.
What you'd want in an instruction on recklessness.
You have
to tell the jury what recklessness is.
Right. As we explained in our reply brief, for a moment, recklessness means that a defendant fails to avert a known or obvious risk that was seriously and eminently avoidable. So some kind of indication.
Okay, so that's what you want. Okay. So that's a standard definition.
Yeah.
Do you think we should consider a civil detainee as more analogous to pretrial detainees or to prisoners?
Well, I think it depends. As I was indicating, those who are held perhaps in a more traditional mental institution might have a different standard than those who are held pursuant to the Sexually Violent Persons Act, because these individuals have
been... Is he being held because he's dangerous to himself or to others or to both?
To others. They have to be shown to have this tendency to want to commit sexual acts upon others. And that detention is reviewed.
Why is it civil rather than criminal? I don't understand.
These statutes have been set up often to allow the detention of these individuals after their criminal sentence has expired. So
I know, but I don't understand why. Why don't you have a criminal sentence that takes the length of which is suited to, you know, how long he's likely to be dangerous?
That's a decision that the legislatures across the country have made to enact these civil statutes,
and they've been upheld. Isn't there a mental disease or defect component of this as well, that they have to be suffering from some mental disease?
A mental deficiency and related to sexual tendencies.
And having just served a sentence for a violent sexual offense or something of that nature.
Correct.
So bottom line here, no jury instruction was submitted with such a recklessness standard or any other standard short of the Eighth Amendment standard, right?
The standard that was given, yes, allowed a finding against Wessel and Lay without any determination that they acted with any level of subjective intent. The instruction was stated in the disjunctive and allowed them to find liability for any one of three reasons, two of which clearly had no obvious requirement that intent be found.
But there was no recklessness standard.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Or any kind of subjective intent standard.
Thank you.
And that coupled with the fact that the district court denied our request for an instruction that a violation of a court order does not violate the due process clause.
Was it argued by the plaintiffs that the court order violation was a constitutional violation?
It was not stated that explicitly, but during closing arguments, counsel said, simply not removing the restraints in violation of a court order judges their reasonableness. And just prior to that, had informed the jury that under the first element, if they found their conduct to be unreasonable, they can impose liability. So it was a strong suggestion that simply violating the court order had some kind of constitutional significance. And there was the instruction that violating a facility directive could not be a due process violation. So the fact that the jury was instructed about that but not the court order likely would have caused confusion, especially in light of these statements during closing argument. And that prejudice resulted, I think, is strongly suggested by the record here, because the jury imposed no punitive damages. And the punitive damage instruction did include a statement that punitive damages could be imposed if the actions were malicious and sadistic or reckless. So that suggests that the jury probably found liability based on one of the other two standards that didn't include any subjective intent requirement.
We'll never know.
In the alternative, we ask that the court consider granting judgment as a matter of law, either on the merits or on the basis of qualified immunity. There was plenty of evidence here to overcome any indication that Wessel and Lay acted with a subjective intent high enough to impose liability.
Why do you say subjective intent?
Oh, partly.
What do you think intent is?
I say that because the standard hasn't been determined, and while we have urged malicious
intent is subjective, so you don't have to say subjective.
Sorry,
intent.
Yes, intent. Mr. Wessel was in a high security facility. He had found to be dangerous, and that's why he was being detained. He had recently been found guilty of major rule violation, so he was required to wear black box handcuffs while he was outside the facility. That, coupled with the fact that he was outside the facility being transported and at that point in a courthouse, which was not a secure facility under the facility's directives, and that the purpose of handcuffing these detainees while they're outside the facility is to prevent escape and access to contraband. And there was also the courtroom demonstration that showed that it was entirely possible for a detainee who was handcuffed, even with the black box handcuffs, to use the restroom. I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Witcher. Mr. Campbell?
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Daniel Campbell, and I represent the appellee, Mr. Earl Sidney Davis, in this case. The appellants, as they just argued yet again, are asking this court to reverse...
The instructions are no good, because the instruction allows the plaintiff to prevail by showing that the bodily restraint was excessive in relation to those purposes, namely legitimate security purposes. Well, that could just be negligence.
Your Honor, that's the standard in restraint cases.
I don't care what it is. That's negligence. That's not recklessness.
It doesn't have to be recklessness in the civil detainee restraint claim context. As the Supreme Court in Youngberg pointed out, and this court utilized in May versus Sheehan, that's the reasonableness standard that's applied in restraint claims for civil detainees.
I'm not talking about reasonableness. That's another one of the instructions. That's an alternative. That's better. But to say excessive in relation to those purposes is to say they were careless, or maybe they just made a mistake.
Your Honor, in interpreting the Youngberg...
An innocent mistake was excessive, you know.
In interpreting the Youngberg decision, the May court provided both alternatives as an instruction.
But I don't understand how that squares with the general principles of liability for these government actors.
It goes back to the separate categories that the courts have defined. Civil detainees are more like free persons who, in a pre-arrest situation, we give an entirely objective standard. That's what Youngberg said, and that's what May...
Look, objective is not the issue. The issue is whether simply having made a mistake and restrained a person, you know, the handcuffs were too small or something like that, or they had a scratch on them that irritated the skin, I don't think that's enough for, you know, federal liability here.
Your Honor, that wasn't the only mistake, if you will.
But that's what the instruction permits the jury, even if they found it was just a mistake, an accident, a pure accident. They're still allowed to render a verdict for the plaintiff.
Not if there was a mistake or an accident, Your Honor, but if they were not reasonably related.
No, but it does. Look at the language. Excessive in relation to those purposes. That can just be a simple mistake.
But that's the standard in these cases.
But that can't be correct.
Your Honor, our contention is that's the standard, and even if it's not correct in this case, the facts of this case show that Wesleyan Lay's actions were so inherently degrading that even if the standard was recklessness...
But you have to have proper instructions.
I understand that, Your Honor, but they also have to show prejudice. And this court doesn't remand a case or waste judicial resources
With respect to the punitive damage verdict here, it troubles me. It seems to me that the defense has shown prejudice because if what you say is correct, there should have been a punitive damage award as well.
Your Honor, there's a couple problems with that argument. One is punitive damages are such a different animal. We're really asking the jury to punish, in addition to a compensatory finding, sort of extra conduct as sort of a deterrence factor. And that would also assume the fact that any time intent is shown in one of these cases, that punitive damages should follow. I don't think that's the case. It's incredibly difficult to get a jury member, to say this conduct violated the Constitution, which they found in this case, and then to say you should also punish them even further for that and award punitive damages. Those two don't necessarily follow, and they're certainly unrelated to the liability standard in this case. The facts of this case are so inherently degrading that even if a recklessness standard was given, Mr. Davis still would have prevailed. The facts show, and Wessel and Lay did not...
But wasn't recklessness part of the punitive damage instruction?
It was.
And the jury found no recklessness by adversely finding on the punitive damage award.
That's one reading, Your Honor. I don't think that's correct. They also could have found intent based on the instruction that was given. The third prong of the instruction is also overlooked, which is clearly an intent-driven instruction. And it really matches the facts the best. Because what
sure,
Wessel...
if that had been it, but it was in the alternative, or...
That's correct, Your Honor. But what the district court did is she tracked the language of Mavie Sheehan, which is the unreasonable restraint claim case that this circuit has utilized, citing Youngberg. That's the standard pronounced. That wasn't...
I would be a lot more comfortable if the with unreasonable than I would with excessive.
And, Your Honor, unreasonable is the standard that the May court was interpreting. They were
I'm
saying...
I'm just concerned with your instructions.
And, Your Honor, even if the instructions...
Very bad instructions.
Even if the instruction was wrong, the jury and the district court still got it right.
Well, but there's Judge Tinder's point about the fact that they didn't... They seem not to have found that there was reckless conduct.
Your Honor, the facts show that that is a product of the difference between what a punitive damage award means. In this case, the defendants did not controvert Mr. Davis's testimony as to what happened on May 22, 2008. They couldn't recall if they were there that day or not.
So you're entitled to summary judgment or what?
Well, we're already at the trial at this point, Your Honor. We're entitled to judgment.
Trial, but you have no instructions, effectively.
They cannot show
prejudice.
You don't
have correct instructions.
Because
imagine a case that was tried and there were no instructions. Would you come up and say, well, there were no instructions, but look, it's obvious what a reasonable jury would do.
Your Honor, if this court finds that the jury instructions were incorrect, you can still find for Mr. Davis because under any standard, even the malicious and sadistic one that Wessel and Lay propose, these facts still meet that muster. These defendants didn't controvert the fact that they were half his age and twice his size in a bathroom with one entrance and one exit when they had already checked him for contraband, assured the judge that they would remove the restraints.
So what you're saying is that if the... You're saying that if the jury had found in favor of the defendants on everything, not just the punitive damages, you would not only have appealed and gotten us to upset the jury verdict, you would have had us, you would have asked us to order judgment for the plaintiffs.
Under this set of facts, yes,
that's
because they were undisputed, Your Honor.
That's very unusual. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Your Honor, this is an unusual case.
I mean, you can
case.
Reverse, pardon?
What happened in this case and what
you
happened...
You want a directed verdict.
What happened in this case
trial,
and what happened
right?
to Mr. Davis was truly degrading. And it was uncontroverted at trial.
You're missing the point. You think that if the case is strong enough, you don't need jury instructions. In fact, you don't need a jury, because if the jury doesn't render a verdict for the plaintiff, you're going to ask us to direct the judge to, you know.
Your Honor, we believe the instructions in this case were correct.
No, they weren't. Not the instruction about the excessive restraint, because that could easily be the result of an accident. The jury could have thought these police, you know, these guards, they were wrong. And maybe they didn't believe the stuff about the laughter, though. And they'd say, yeah, they were wrong, they used excessive force, but, you know, it was a mistake, and they're afraid of this guy, he's got a bad record, so that's what they...
But, Your Honor, the jury could have equally found under the other two prongs of the instruction.
They could have what?
They could have easily found under one of the other two prongs of the
instruction. But we don't know, right? If you give a mess of instructions, and you say, find this, that, or the other thing, you don't know which instruction the jury followed.
We don't, but looking at the facts most
no,
aligned.
No, you don't get the point. You're saying you can have a, you can uphold a judgment without any instructions at all, if it, if the, if it's, if you really think the jury could only have found one way, even though they were incorrectly instructed, still you can uphold their verdict.
I don't think that, Your Honor. It's just that in this case, if the court finds that the jury instructions were erroneous, it can still find that Mr. Davis would have prevailed under a stricter standard.
What do we do with the next case?
Well, Your Honor, would be a fine opportunity to clarify what those instructions should be if the court finds that necessary.
So we'd say the instructions were incorrect.
But we're going to give it to you. You see, that's the problem.
Your Honor, this court
can look ahead.
You're absolutely, I understand your concern, Your Honor, and I see my time is up. I'll just conclude by saying that this court is allowed to find for a party and not remand the case if they find that even under a more exacting standard or if the jury was instructed correctly that Mr. Davis would have still prevailed.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Campbell. Ms. Witcher, do you have anything further?
Yes, Your Honor, just a couple of points. First, on the punitive damages, the fact that none were awarded is evidence that suggests what the jury was thinking. But also, the case that we cite in our reply brief, the Rainwater case, that came from the same court as this, that jury was instructed under the recklessness standard after Kingsley was decided, and that jury found in favor of the defendant. So, that suggests that if properly instructed, the jury might have come to a different conclusion.
Well, every case stands
on its
facts.
but it is evidence that with the proper standard, the jury could apply the facts to that standard. And as Judge Posner suggested, the instructions here and just invited the jury to substitute its judgment on security matters for Wessel and Lay, which the Supreme Court has indicated is improper. We ask that you grant a new trial or reverse the judgment outright. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, both counsel. So our next case.